What's happening, everybody, and welcome to today's edition of Swag Talk, the show where we cover the swag inside and out. I am your swag tour guide, Charles Wells, aka C Wells, coming at you with another edition. We're gonna put the closing stamp on week one. We're gonna go ahead and recap the two games that took place on Sunday, and tomorrow we're gonna open the book on week two. So there's 9 games on the schedule, so we'll go ahead and talk about those. Thursday, live edition of Swag Smoke coming at you, 6:30 p.m. Central Time, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So make sure to check that out. Hit the socials down below. Get them a like, a follow, whatever the case may be. Check out the podcast, anchor.fm/swagtalk, Spotify, Stitcher, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. If you haven't done so already, why don't you go ahead and subscribe to the channel. And hit that notification bell so you can be alerted to content that I upload, like this video right here that was supposed to come out one day, coming out another day. So make sure you do that so you don't get lost in the sauce, so to speak. So with that being said, man, feel free to comment anytime you want. I'll enjoy all comments. So make sure you hop in the comments. And just, you know, enjoy yourself. And hopefully, man, y'all enjoying this season so far. It's been an up and down week one, typical week one to some degree. Some interesting games took place. And speaking of which, we're going to start off with Tennessee State and Grambling playing in the Black College Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. Grambling was able to pick up the victory 16-10 in a very hard-fought game. This was a game I felt like Grambling had to win. I don't like to really say, you know, week one games are must wins, but I thought that for their confidence, they needed this W. Because obviously coming off of the spring that they had, they need to prove to people that they aren't that team, which I don't really think they are that team. So it was important for them to pick up the victory. Just looking over the scoring summary, Tennessee State actually scored first on a 39-yard field goal from Antonio Zito. That was a 7-play, 21-yard drive, taking 4 minutes and 5 seconds off the clock. Tennessee State led 3-0. Grambling got a Patrick J. Touchdown reception from Elijah Walker. Extra point good, 15 plays, 79 yards, 7 minutes and 14 seconds time of possession. That score came with 12 minutes and 41 seconds to go in the second quarter. Grambling led 7-3, and that would be our halftime score. Third quarter, 7 minutes and 3 seconds remaining. Devon Starling for Tennessee State, 3-yard touchdown run. Extra point was good. 12 plays, 58 yards, 6 minutes, 8 seconds time of possession. Tennessee State led 13-10. Tennessee State led 10-7. And then Grambling took the lead back with a 4-yard run by Elijah Walker, capping a 15-play drive. 15-yard drive, taking 1:25 off the clock. Grambling led 13-10. And then Garrett Urban kicked a 24-yard field goal for Grambling to close out the scoring with 9 minutes and 48 seconds remaining. So all in all, this was a game I think both teams still have some work to do, but it was a good first win for Grambling. Looking at the statistics, Grambling ran for 112 yards on Tennessee State ran for 112 yards on the night, 30 carries, 3.7 yards per carry, and 1 touchdown. Grambling 141 yards on 44 carries, 3.2 yards per carry, and 1 touchdown. So neither team really lit it up on the ground. Tennessee State 13-24 passing, 118 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Grambling 4 of 11 on the night, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, 43 yards passing. Obviously, that's a number that's going to have to improve as the season goes on. I mean, obviously, it will. I don't see them passing for under 50 yards every game, so that's going to improve. But that's a number that definitely has to get better. And the completion percentage definitely has to go up. But finding a way to win when your numbers are like that is a vital portion to a team. Tennessee State, 230 yards of total offense, 54 plays, 4.3 yards per play. Grambling, 184 yards, 55 plays, 3.3 yards per play. Neither team had a good per play average at all. But surprisingly, only one turnover in this game, scrambling through the interception, no fumbles at all from either team. Tennessee State penalized 18 times for 150 yards. That's a killer. You know, that if you get flagged that many times, man, you're making a lot of mistakes. You're shooting yourself in the foot a lot. You're keeping the other team on the field. You're not staying on the field yourself. And, you know, it's hard to beat anybody with 18 penalties. Grambling 4 for 35. Grambling averaged 41 yards per punt. So that's definitely a very valuable tool to have in a game like this. That's that hidden yardage that that sometimes people don't really realize can swing a game. Time of possession, Tennessee State 33 minutes and 8 seconds. Grambling 26 minutes and 52 seconds. Tennessee State 3 of 13 on third down. Grambling 6 of 13. Both team, Grambling had 2 sacks, Tennessee State 1. Obviously not a lot of individual numbers to kind of look at, but just really quickly, Jeremy Hickbottom was the leading passer for Tennessee State, the former Grambling quarterback. He was 8 of 10 for 65 yards. His longest completion was 18 yards. Tucker Pope, 1 for 2, 31 yards. Devion Bryant, 4 of 12 for 22 yards. Elijah Walker, 4 of 11 for Grambling. Like I said, 43 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Longest pass was 18 yards. Devon Starling, leading rusher for Tennessee State, 18 carries, 88 yards, 1 touchdown, long of 25. Bryant, 8 carries, 30 yards. 8 carries, 24 yards. He did lose 6. For Grambling, Elijah Walker was the leading rusher with 17 carries for 77 yards, followed by C.J. Russell. 11 carries for 36 yards, and Darquise Brunton, 10 carries, 26 yards. So, obviously, Elijah Walker is going to be a guy that makes some plays with his legs. He's going to have to improve with his passing. But from, you know, what I heard from the game, he did make some solid reads, but he just could not complete the pass at that time. So I think he's gonna improve his first game, and you know, not a lot can really, really be gleaned from it. But it, you know, you start off with a W, that's always an important thing, and you can build on this. Is, you know, obviously in a FCS type matchup, it's easier to build off a win than a loss. So it's, you know, this is very important to pick up a W for a team that doesn't have the most confidence from outside the team, because you know most teams already, you know, come into a game feeling like they're gonna win. So this was an important win for Grambling as a team, but also for people outside to see that this team can win, and that what happened in the spring was not really indicative of who this team or this program is. So we look forward to Grambling playing again. Their next game is Saturday against Southern Miss. So that's an outing that's going to be a tough affair, but we'll talk about that tomorrow. The last game, and the game that most people probably have already looked at, talked about, you know, broke down, put together, broke down again, Orange Blossom Classic, Jackson State, Florida A&M. Man, this was a hell of a game. 7-6, the Blue Bengals pull it out. I like that defense. Both defenses played very well. I think Jackson State had the explosive plays. Florida A&M did not really hit very many explosive plays. So that, you know, that's gonna kill you in a game like this. But they were able to bend but not break, and kind of hold Jackson State when they would get across the 50 and get close to the red zone, and they would be able to make some plays. But I thought Shadur played a hell of a game. I mean, you know, they didn't ask him to do anything crazy, which is what I thought, you know, would happen. They, you know, they tried to run the ball, you know, to kind of set some things up. They gave him some shorter passes. And then, you know, they did try to hit downfield, you know, from time to time, because he did have time to throw. Florida and them didn't really get to him too much. The two fumbles, he was trying to make a play. The first fumble is a play that he'll learn he probably already know. I mean, he knows because he's been playing quarterbacks all the time. But, you know, that's a play that you can get away with in high school. You know, that's a play you can't get away with in college. So he's going to file that away and know not to do that again. You know, look downfield, throw it away, eat it, whatever. Don't try to, you know, try to make something happen out of nothing like that. The other fumble to me was just a freak kind of thing. You know, exchange, you know, zone read, exchange didn't go right. So he didn't make any serious glaring mistakes. I think the defense did a good job of shutting everything down that happened. That whenever they made a mistake, I thought they did a very good job of being aggressive and keeping McKay off balance. I think he did enough. He never settled in. And when he did have opportunities to throw the ball, I think he saw things that weren't there. I think he felt like the pocket was always collapsing on him. I just looked at his body language. He just didn't seem like he was there. And I'm sure he saw Niles Gaddy coming at him pretty much all the time, even on the sideline. You know, I think he just saw 57 running at him at all times because Niles Gaddy was totally unblocked. They finally adjusted to that. I saw a couple of times they would actually slide the running back over to the left side and leave the right side open or vice versa. And you just can't, you know, with any guy, you just can't do that. You can't allow a guy to continuously get free because eventually they're going to get home and that's going to, you know, start to wear on your quarterback. But not a pretty game offensively, but there's things that I was impressed with from both teams. Florida A&M didn't have the numbers, but I thought they ran the ball well. They ran the ball 71 yards on the night. They averaged 2 yards per carry, so obviously that's not a good number, but I thought they were able to hit a few big plays on the ground. That was Jackson State ran the ball for 71 yards on the night, 2 yards per carry. They still had a few good runs, but just not, you know, not a consistent yardage effort. 109 yards rushing for Florida A&M on 31 carries, 3.5 yards per carry. So, clearly better, but I thought they found a couple of things in the running game that they were able to exploit. And it's going to be important if Florida A&M is to win this year that the running game has to get better. I felt like 150, 175 yards would be a good number for them running the ball because I felt like that would mean they would have some success. And they got close to that, but the passing game is really what did them in. They were 23 of 42 on the night, 125 yards. No turnovers, no interceptions, no touchdowns, but just no continuity, no rhythm in the passing game. Just not a good outing for the quarterback, Rashawn McKay especially. Just never really got comfortable. Shadur was 18 of 24 on the night, 221 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. A number that you can really look at. 9.2 yards per attempt for Jackson State, 3 yards per attempt for Florida A&M. They weren't throwing the ball down the field. They were trying to, you know, get things out quick, and it just wasn't working. 5.4 yards per completion for Florida A&M, 12.3 for Jackson State. So, again, down the field. Jackson State attacked. Even with, you know, not asking Shadur to do anything crazy, they still – were able to attempt to stretch the field. I thought Florida A&M didn't do that enough. Obviously, first quarter is for sure they didn't have the time. And I think once they started to give him time, he just never got comfortable in the pocket to really take advantage of those receivers that they have. Time of possession, even 28 minutes, 42 seconds, 28 minutes, 32 seconds for Florida A&M. Jackson State, 3 of 14 on third down. Florida A&M, 5 of 17. Neither team converted a fourth down. 1 for 4 in the red zone for Jackson State. 1 for 1 in the red zone for Florida A&M. 3 sacks for Jackson State. 2 for Florida A&M. So, again, pretty even. I mean, obviously, with a score being a one-point score, you're going to have an even game to some degree. And that's pretty much what you had here. Peyton Pickett was the leading rusher for Jackson State. 15 carries for 62 yards. Longer 25, average 4.1 yards per carry. I thought he did a good job of running hard trying to make some things happen, but not forcing anything. Santi Marshall had a couple of nice runs, 10 carries for him, 23 yards. He had a longer eight, but I thought he did pretty good. He had a couple of runs where he got bottled up, but for the most part, I thought the running game was okay. Obviously, that's something that's going to get better because both of those backs are good backs. So you can expect that to improve as the season goes on, because for Florida, for Jackson State, they're not going to face too many other defenses on the schedule that's even comparable to Florida A&M. So that's, you know, that number would go up as they move through the schedule. For Florida A&M, Bishop Bonnet, 15 carries, 76 yards. I thought he ran hard on the night. Longer 20 yards, 5.1 yards per carry. Terrell Jennings, 7 carries, 35 yards, 5 yards per carry. You know, both your backs averaging over 5 yards per carry, that's a good number. I would have, you know, liked to see them have ran the ball a little bit more, but, you know, you can't really change what happened. Trevante Rucker, 3 catches, 83 yards, 32 yards with his long. He made a lot of – I mean, he only had 3 catches, but, man, the dude was everywhere. I thought he had more catches than that, but he's going to be a big play guy. Josh Lanier did a good job of working underneath and picking up yards after the catch, 6 catches, 61 yards. Warren Newman, 2 catches for 30 yards and a huge punt return to put them in a scoring position. Chad Hunter, 7 catches, 49 yards for Florida A&M. David Manigo, 3 catches, 43 yards. Xavier Smith, 6 catches, 16 yards. That's, you know, when your top dude is not getting the yards, when you consider to be, you know, like they say, the rack boys run out the catch, that's just not going to get it done. Aubrey Miller, solid outing. He was the SWAC Defensive Player of the Week. 9 tackles on the night, 1 tackle for loss, 1 sack. So, huge game for him. I thought Shiloh played a hell of a game, man. He laid lumber out there at safety, man. He did a really good job of being physical and getting in there and making plays when he needed to. He got flagged for that interference, but, you know, that was a play that could, you know, and sometimes refs see that and sometimes they don't. So, you know, that play can be called one game and cannot be called the next. I thought the defensive line did a really good job. Antoine Owens really did a good job of wreaking havoc. Jermaine Crane was in there. That's a guy who's been there a while, but he made some plays. Obviously, you know, Keontae Hampton was around. That defense was good, but the scary thing is they're going to get better because this is, you know, a lot of these guys first time playing a game together. So, you know, you don't always know where guys are going to be when game time happens. So their chemistry is only going to get better as you play games. And that's a scary feat. But Florida A&M defense was pretty solid, too. I thought they did a good job of responding to losing their starting middle linebacker due to the targeting penalty. That usually hurts teams sometimes, but they, you know, they played well. Marquise Bell, obviously he made some big plays. And I look forward to both of these teams being a factor in the East Division moving forward. I'm not gonna write FAMU off because of this game. I mean, you know, whether it was, you know, 7-6, 27-26, whatever. It was a close game and it was an even game. You know, to say that Florida A&M didn't play that well, Jackson State played well, but, you know, not, you know, they didn't go for the knockout punch too many times. I thought this game was even, and I'm not going to write Florida A&M off, but I will say they're going to have to get some continuity with that offense. They're going with the freshman this week coming up, Junior Maratovic. They named him the starter for the Fort Valley game. So we'll see if that helps them. One of the things that was said by most people in when you talked about FAMU coming into the season was quarterback play was going to go a long way in determining how this team season goes. So if they are constantly switching quarterbacks, then they're going to be in a tough position. But I think their defense can keep them in games. It's just if your offense is sputtering because of quarterback play, how much longer can your defense continue to stay on the field and make play after play after play? And this was just one of those games where I think they ended up on the good end of the stick in that, because a lot of times with your defense constantly coming back on the field, they get tired and they're gonna give up a cheap touchdown. So this was a good game. I know some people don't like low scoring defensive games. It wasn't really sloppy. I mean, there were a couple of turnovers, but it wasn't a super sloppy game. So it was just defenses made plays. Defenses stood up and they made plays. I thought it was an entertaining game, and I'm looking forward to seeing both these teams in action moving forward. Jackson State is moving on to the Southern Heritage Classic in Memphis on Saturday against Tennessee State. And like I said, Florida A&M is playing Fort Valley State also on Saturday. So that's going to do it for today's show. We'll be back tomorrow to start the preview, the week two action. And, man, y'all enjoy y'all Tuesday, and we will see you guys tomorrow. We're out.